is time to put away the bias, the lies, and deceit and bring forth real talk from real people about real news. Providing the out loud truth and capturing the essence of a new generation all in a fast-paced hour. This is Viewpoint Presents.
Welcome to Viewpoint Presents. This is Malcolm Out Loud. Friends, we are talking about that 10-part series that we've been bringing to you. And this one today is on a topic that is as big as the universe, huh? Climate change. The truth about climate change, huh? If there is a truth. Well, you know, they always say there's your truth, my truth, and the real truth, right? Today we'll dive into some part of that truth and see what we have here. There's a lot of misnomers about climate change, a lot of bad information out there. And like everything, it's politicized. Everything is politics. Remember that. I mean, nothing is not politics. Let me give you an example up front here. For instance, now we know everyone's got a political agenda. The Brookings Institute on their website, more bad news on the global warming front. And they have the California fires there, referencing that the fires are, this is part of the responsibility of global warming, perhaps. So they plant the seed with the public. And this is kind of what happens. It's all across the board. The Guardian, the same thing. And you can come right down the list here of publications. So the question becomes this. Is this all fear-mongering? And is this to drive a political agenda of some sort? Or might there be some truth to this climate changing? And I have a pretty simple man's viewpoint of all of this. We'll talk about that today here. Let's get to our panel discussion here. I'd like to welcome on here Tom Weismuller, Dr. Jay Lair, Sally Fernandez. I'll tell you more about the three of the panel in just a bit here, but let's get to the top of the program here, friends. And all right, so we asked the big question, guys. Is climate change fact or fiction? I guess the thing is climate change inevitable? Tom Weismuller, we're going to put you right on the spot there. And so that's the big question at the upfront comments here. What's your opening remark on that?
Well, the first part of your question is absolutely correct. Climate is changing. Climate has always changed. Climate will always change. That's the thing about climate. And if I want to really define climate properly, you're talking about a long-term, multi-year, multi-decadal change that can be reflected in temperature and things like that. But it's not weather. Weather is more current, more instantaneous. Weather is regional. But climate is worldwide, and it's usually temperature-driven. Is it changing? Yes, it is.
Yeah, well, that's a profound answer to a profound question there. And it stands to reason, Dr. Jay Lair, let's get you in on this here. Now, when people, you see where Tom goes there immediately, which is a really simple answer to a probably more of a complex question. But I guess the climate really is changing, but it's supposed to change, isn't it, Jay?
Of course it is, and the real question is, does man have anything to do with it? Does our burning of fossil fuels that has increased carbon dioxide content 40% in the last 70 years have anything to do with the changing climate? And my answer is no. Now, Tom is a little better at the mathematical models, and he may feel that it's a tiny, tiny amount. My feeling is, since it really cannot be measured, the default answer is man has no control, no impact at all. And it's the idea of the opposition that man has a lot to do with it, and therefore we have to change the economy of the world by eliminating fossil fuels. It cannot be done. You can't run the world on wind and solar, but along the way you certainly can destroy the world's economy.
Yeah. Well, you know, Jay, if we could take the hot air, actually, from the politicians and fuel the cars with that, we'd be in good shape, you know?
You know, that's very interesting, because when I speak, I always carry a carbon dioxide monitor, and I show my audiences and I explain to them that as we're talking, we're pumping more carbon dioxide into the air, and the number goes up on my monitor.
There you go. This I understand when it comes to hot air. All right, which is no reflection on Sally Fernandez, by the way. Now, Sally, you are the author of the book Climatized, and you heavily researched this entire topic. I mean, like nobody's business. But tell me, what's the biggest aha moment?
Well, the question you're asking asking before was whether the climate changes. And what's more interesting for me, from my perspective, is that it's the nomenclature that changes, because originally it was about global warming. And then it became the battle that Tom and Jay took up in terms of whether global warming is being affected, man-made, created thus far. Well, when there was such a debate on that, the government went and changed it to climate change, because nobody can deny the fact that climate changes. And right. I think that's where the politicization starts kind of cropping up, even though it goes back very far. And I can get into the weeds of the history as we move forward on this topic.
Well, that is an interesting point you say right there, because what you're saying, they've repackaged the problem. And so that's just called good marketing, Sally. Not a bad thing entirely when you have an agenda attached to it, but that is what they've done. They've repackaged the problem. You're kind of right with that. At first, it was the global warming. That's what you would hear all the time. Now you're hearing climate change, probably because, Tom, as you were saying, obviously the climate does change, so they're not exactly lying. They just lie after the point, I guess, that they started.
It was global warming until, for about an 18-20 year period, even as carbon dioxide continued increasing, the temperature basically flatlined. They had a couple of spikes here and there, mm-hmm. but it wasn't warming as fast as they could, and it certainly wasn't warming at the same percentage increase that carbon dioxide was. So they had to change the name, because the global warming part wasn't working anymore.
From what I see, when we talk about it being just a natural state of affairs, and Tom, as you were saying, the climate always changes, you know, if you look back at evidence here specifically, it shows that the planet was much, much warmer just 200,000 years ago, yet we didn't have cars, planes, buses, industry. We didn't have any of that, really. I mean, so what do they say usually to that response, Tom, out there? What does the opposing side say to that?
Well, keep in mind, 100,000 years ago, yes, it was warmer, but we had an ice age in between. A huge ice age, worldwide temperatures dropping like a rock. And we only got out of it around 20,000 years ago. And that's when the great continental ice sheets, and these are miles deep sheets of ice, lots of volume, lots of water in them, began melting. And they melted at a pretty good clip for about 10,000 years and raising sea level about 400 feet in the process, which is huge, absolutely huge. But the continental glaciers are gone now. We have a few mountain glaciers left, mm-hmm. a little bit more dribbling into the oceans. And for the last 7,000 years, sea levels have been relatively flat, slightly increasing as you get a little bit more melting from Greenland and Antarctica and the mountain glaciers.
Tom, you're not really answering Malcolm's question. He asked you, what do they do about it? And the answer is nothing. They ignore everything that Tom just said. They don't deal with it because it doesn't work for them.
Yeah. But, you know, you're absolutely correct, Jay. The actual percentage of human-contributed carbon dioxide to the atmosphere is about 3% per year of all the CO2 that's generated in the world. 3%, and half of that gets reabsorbed. So now we're down to 1.5% that humans are contributing to CO2, and we're trying to curtail little pieces of that 1.5% and thinking it's going to have a big impact on climate.
Well,
and the answer is
I'd like to say, Tom, maybe they do that because they think they'll sleep better at night, but probably the other alternative is that it's a profitable business. When you look at climate change as a whole, there's a whole business model behind it, clearly. People are making money. There's always a motive here. There's always a motive. All right, let me do this. Let's do formal introductions. Let me tell everybody who we're speaking to now, and then let's dive more into this fascinating topic. I mean, it really is very fascinating. What I want to point out today, and my goal, is that we all understand more about climate change when we finish this conversation today, friends, but also understand where the real motives are coming from, which is what I just stated, as always is the case with these kinds of topics here. So again, our panel today, Tom Weismuller, worked in the Apollo NASA era and lectures on space program and climate issues all over the globe, friends. He just came back from, just not too long ago, chairing part of the University of Porto's climate conference in Portugal, in fact. He's a founding member of the Johnson Space Center, based the right climate stuff. It's a group there at Johnson Space Center. Also, Dr. Jay Lehr is here. He's senior fellow and science director of the Heartland Institute. It's a Chicago-based think tank, if you hadn't heard of that one. He's an international speaker, scientist, and author who's and he's testified many times before Congress and actually many countries, in fact, on a lot of these environmental issues. And as you can hear with the opening remarks, if you're wrong, he'll cut you off and tell you and correct you right away. He's my kind of guy. Anyway, Sally Fernandez is rounds out our panel here, and she is the author of Climatized, a fascinating book, which I have read. It is the first in the Max Ford thriller series. It's currently being made into a major motion picture to be released in 2020, in fact, friends. It's part of a three-part film project. Climatized separates the rhetoric from the science and exposes, again, all these politics we talk about on the global warming debate. Friends, again, it's called Viewpoint Presents, our 10-part series. We'll pause a moment. We'll be back and continue this fascinating conversation.
The America Out Loud Talk Radio app is on Android or Apple. It's the perfect way to listen in to the new generation of talk shows and hosts who are ready to inform and inspire.
The Out Loud perspective awaits you in life, love, politics, a healthy lifestyle, your faith, personal development, and living an out loud life on AmericaOutloud.com. Blitzer News and Entertainment Network, where you can listen 24/7 on our free apps on both Android and Apple. Welcome to the new era in communications, America Out Loud Talk Radio. We are back with you, friends, here. Viewpoint Presents. It is Malcolm Out Loud here, and we're going to begin. I think you learned something from today, if you haven't already, but about climate change, and really try to draw maybe a truthful narrative would be a refreshing break, actually, because it's a conversation that I think a lot of people have turned off, and they've turned it off because they really don't know what to think. There's a lot of information out there, as I was sharing with you just a minute ago, with the Brookings and the fires. I guess I'd like to ask you that first. Let's start with Dr. Jay Lehr. Again, our panel here, let me reintroduce you to all three, as we just gave formal introductions, but Dr. Jay Lehr is here, Tom Weismuller, and Sally Fernandez. Jay, I'd like to ask you, again, the headlines with the Brookings, with the California fires, which have been devastating, to say the least. Global warming have anything to do on that?
Absolutely zero. I've been working on forest fires for many decades, and the environmental zealots do not allow any of the dead timber that is a fuel in our forest to be removed. And so the forest fires are getting worse and worse because they have more fuel. We also don't have fire breaks around houses that are built in the woods, and we also have a problem with electric lines. Global warming had zero to do with the terrible tragedies on wildfires. It all comes back to politics and money. You nailed it at the beginning of the first section, that global warming, this entire battle, is all about politics. It's all about money. It really has nothing to do with science. Tom Weismuller, one of the greatest scientists there is, knows all the science, and he really works it out and puts tremendous amount of time into it. But at the bottom line, the answers are that man has virtually nothing to do with it. It's all redistributing wealth around the world, creating socialism, and basically the wind and solar lobbies play a huge role because of if they can get rid of fossil fuels, which is not possible, they will prosper, and they are prospering.
Yeah, that is well said, Jay. That is well said. Tom, I want to go right to an article here. I want to read you something, please, out of The Guardian here. I think this is fascinating, and I think you'll be the one to comment on this. So it says, depending on how we define pre-industrial temperatures and how fast we keep consuming fossil fuels, we'll likely burn through the rest of the 1.5 Celsius carbon budget within the next 3 to 10 years, okay? Now, to stay below 1.5, the IPCC therefore concludes the world must embark on a World War II level effort to transition away from fossil fuels and also start removing carbon dioxide from the atmosphere at large scales. And they get into some pretty interesting things. But here's what I want to talk about, Tom. It says, realistically, this is not going to happen. We're currently on track for more than 3 degrees Celsius global warming by 2100. We can do better than that if countries ratchet down their carbon pledges and implement more aggressive climate policies. But with some nations moving in the wrong direction, like the United States of America and potentially Brazil, electing climate denier presidents, even staying below 2 degrees Celsius is looking increasingly less likely. Interesting piece there, and I thought it was very relevant to our conversation, Tom. What do you say about that?
Well, first of all, there's a premise right there which I believe is incorrect. And let me take you back in history about 2,000 years. CO2 in the atmosphere 2,000 years ago was about 280 parts per million. In that period, as we pass through time, we have a medieval warm period. Then we have where temperatures went up almost a degree and a half worldwide. And then they plunged in what we call the Little Ice Age. They went down. Meanwhile, carbon dioxide level pedaling along at 280 parts per million. No real change. So the Little Ice Age comes down, temperatures plunge, Europe is frozen. You look at the old paintings, you can see them having bonfires on the Thames River in England. Anyway, building a bonfire on the river ought to melt the ice, but it was so darn cold that the ice didn't even melt. And then finally, we creep out of the Little Ice Age with a little blip here and there. Around 1800, we had something called the Dalton Minimum, where temperatures went down again. Just by bad luck, Napoleon decides to invade Russia at that time and enters with 100,000 soldiers and leaves with 10,000. Catastrophic crop failures, and then temperatures climb again. And it also coincides with the beginning of the industrial age. And as CO2 then finally rises in tandem with temperature, now remember, it was flatlined for 1,800 years during these warm periods and cold periods. No change in CO2. So finally, CO2 is linked up with temperature, actually with the industrial age beginning. And now CO2 is still rising and temperatures worldwide have begun to cool. And that's not reflected in the CO2. So this projection that they're using, there's an expression in science that says correlation is not causation, is not necessarily causation. Mm-hmm. Sometimes it is. But, you know, just the fact that two things happen together at the same time does not mean that one causes the other. And that's shown in the recent numbers where temperatures have essentially gone flat. CO2 is still inexorably rising. We are still pumping CO2 into the atmosphere. And they're going to become uncorrelated, which is why they changed the MEM from global warming to climate change.
Okay.
Malcolm, what Tom is really showing, there is no physical evidence whatsoever that man has anything to do with the climate. They gin up some mathematical equations because there is no physical system. They make up the equations. They have a handful of variables they plug in a manner that will give an answer that they want, which is a rising temperature. It's foolish. I just finished writing an article called Mathematical Modeling Delusions, trying to show people like your audience without a science background how absolutely absurd the models are that all of this IPCC type of studies are based on.
Yeah. Just to follow up on what Jay said in terms of, you know, why is this all happening? You know, it's kind of like Tom has the science and Jay is right in terms of the politicization of it. Why are they doing it? And it's quite interesting. I mean, in my research, you can trace it back to basically 1987, where the first prime minister of Norway wrote an article called Our Common Future. And from there, Rothschild came out and made a sound about global warming and carbon dioxide emissions. But that fit very nicely into a 1982 sort of a treaty that wasn't ratified called Agenda 21, which most governments signed. Basically, what it was talking about was sustainable development, and that we're going to outlive our resources. One tenet of that was global warming, because if it can take control of the atmosphere, the resources, the waterways, the oceans, then they can manipulate who gets what. And it gets very, I mean, it's conspiratorial, but it's real. Because what happened from that whole process became Al Gore Earth Summit, became climate, or Chicago Climate Exchange. For these people who are so into keeping CO2 out of the atmosphere, they create an actual commodity that's traded that says that I don't need to pollute the atmosphere so much to produce my product, so I'm going to sell you credits so you can pollute more. Yeah. So the whole thing went from there to what Jay said, the solar panels and the wind. If you can convince people that they're responsible for polluting the atmosphere, then you can get them to buy in to all of this, which is trillions and trillions of dollars. So if the Jays and the Toms of the world can prove that this is just a big scam, which it pretty much is, but we like to say, you know, it's not a hoax, but it is. In layman's terms, this is a way to redistribute wealth, get the poor countries more money to take CO2 out, which would basically eliminate their crops that feed them.
Right.
So, I mean, that's kind of where it comes
well,
down.
Well, the whole thing is because we're not scientists, as Jay said. None of us are scientists, really. That's not what we do for a living. As listeners are listening to this and wondering, what is the real truth behind this? Here's the thing. Before I want to get into the Paris Agreement in just a moment and talk about that, because that's been very controversial. Before I do, you know, as you just set up the talk here with the information that's coming forward, the one thing I recognize is the far left, they are much better marketers than the right. I find this in a lot of topics. They are really, really good. So now, right now, climate change is people are fearful. And you read these headlines and you see the forest fires and you see the hurricanes and you see the storms and you see the heat waves or whatever. And they're constantly blamed on this climate change, which is tied to man. They have marketed this very, very well. Why is it that the other side doesn't tend to market it as well? Jay, let me ask you that question to have, if you have an answer to that.
Yes, I do. Malcolm, it's a very simple answer. They are able to tell every lie in the book. They don't have to be honest. We are scientists, or we are honest laymen, and we have to tell the truth. They can say anything they want, and they do, to promote their political position and their economic position, and it's really a disgrace. Now, Tom and I write science and science and science. Sally went to work and researched all the science and wrote this amazing book that you can read and learn really all about the debate about climate science, at the same time being thrilled, changing from page to page. And I got to tell a 30-second real-life promotional story. I am flying in a four-seater plane with a friend of mine who's an American airline pilot and his wife. His wife was flying over the Appalachians, and this tiny little plane is bouncing around. I'm a world-class skydiver, but I'm scared to death in this little plane going over the mountains. The only thing that saved me was being engrossed in Sally Hernandez's book that took my mind off what was happening to me in that little plane.
That's good. That's a story you won't forget there. Yeah. I've been in those little planes. They can be scary, Jay, no question, but I used to fly them as a young man, the little Cessnas, actually. But
exactly.
Yeah, no, they're very interested. Yeah. So, all right. Well, that's a great story.
Just make sure you always carry my book, Malcolm.
Exactly. Yeah, no, I know. Well, the Max Ford Thriller series. We're on it.
But yeah, it's actually better the second time around, so keep it with you.
Yeah. Well, it is fascinating, the whole thing and the way you've laid it out there. Tom, I love this, what we're talking about here with Jay and all, and he just says, well, the other side. But here's the thing I want to ask you that, I mean, there's two sides to this thing. There are scientists who believe that that the climate is rapidly changing. What about those folks?
Yes, and the government spends about $6 billion a year supporting more than 100 mathematical models of academics and environmental groups. So really, they're able to put their their ethics under wraps for the money they get to do the research, and they're able to self-hypnotize themselves, or they're so liberal that they also dislike capitalism and think we ought to move to a more socialist world. And so by generating these models that scare the hell out of the public, that serves their own interests.
Okay, Jay, that was a great answer, man. I can't top that. And you know what? I'm going to take that as that was the best answer you could have given back. That I'll tell you, they're out of their minds, right? they're scientists' minds.
Hey, Malcolm.
Yeah,
let me jump in a little bit. And it actually keys off of what Jay just said.
Yeah.
You know, politicians in general do not like to go on record as having to raise taxes. Most people don't like that.
Yeah, George H.W. Bush found that out the hard way, we found out, right?
That's right. That's right. So what's the better approach for a politician? It's to get the public to ask them to impose a tax. And the way to do that is to scare the public and then say, yes, if we put a tax on CO2, mm-hmm. the public will benefit and you won't be scared anymore. So here you get school kids learning that taxation of CO2 is going to save the planet. And their parents then say, okay, let's vote for a CO2 tax. And guess what? We're not going to tax you. We're going to tax the oil companies. We're going to tax the coal companies. We're not going to tax you.
Yeah.
But guess what? That increase in taxation for the petrochemical companies is passed right
out
to the public.
Yeah, that's so dumb, Tom, when people think that the tax in the companies doesn't tax everybody. I mean, obviously
that's
it's a
right.
tax on all of us. I mean, come on, Tom, I want to ask you now about the Paris Agreement specifically here. Here's another very interesting thing. Now, Trump obviously just came back from the G20, and a lot of angst with him. He was the only world leader to really stand up to this climate change business in a significant way. But you take a look at China and India. Now, they were given an exemption, as I understand it, Tom, to 2030, where they would be able to start reducing emissions then. They're obviously the biggest users on the planet.
In the interim, they're mm-hmm. allowed to increase their emissions.
They're allowed to increase?
They are allowed to increase their emissions until 2030.
So how is
they're
that
not,
fair?
Even,
how is that fair?
They're saying, well, we're developing. You know, and we haven't gotten our population out of poverty yet. And yes, there is truth to that.
There
but
is
China
truth to that. Yeah.
has made tremendous gains. And I was in China a couple of years ago.
Mm-hmm.
They have beautiful cities now. Lots of people are gainfully employed. They are building cities and then sending people into them. And by the way, they're producing goods that are being sold all over the world.
Oh, yeah.
And that's a quite.
They build a coal plant every week.
Wow.
That's right.
Wow.
And they need to, because electricity is the lifeblood of human progress.
Yeah.
And if you think about it, without electricity, where would you be today? We'd be no better than people in the African jungle living in huts, because there'd be no other way to get things other than harvesting wood in the forest. And the U.S. Forest Service won't allow you to do that on public land either, by the way.
So you agree with the president
to
move out of the Paris Agreement was the right decision, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely correct.
Perfect example of wealth distribution that isn't going to do anything for climate change.
The Paris Agreement.
Malcolm, the biggest thrill in my life was that 9 days after the president was elected, his people called me and asked me if I'd put together a PowerPoint slideshow to support his position that he thought global warming was a hoax. And I did that, had correspondence with the White House for the first 6 months of his term until I think on June 1st, he gave a speech in the Rose Garden pulling out of the Paris Accord. And this is funny, the White House called me 2 hours before his speech and said, you won, he's pulling out. He was supposed to talk at 3 o'clock. He didn't get on till 3:15. And in that 15 minutes, I'm sweating that his daughter and the then Secretary of the Interior talked him into changing his mind. But he got up at 3:15, I think it was the 1st of June, and pulled out of the Paris Accord because it was going to cost our country $3 trillion and not alter the climate whatsoever, just distribute our wealth to these other countries that want it.
You know, Jay, that's interesting because a lot of people, you're right, he didn't buckle in that 15, 20 minutes. And I hear what you're saying with the daughter and the secretary there. But, you know, there were other times they thought the president was going to buckle as well. But here's the thing, Jay, about this president. He's a business president. So he looks at everything from a business standpoint. That's the benefit of having a really an entrepreneurial mind in the Oval Office, isn't it?
Absolutely. And he has now really cemented, and you're right, people had worried along the way the last year. He has now named a science advisor, and I won't even tell you his name, who just lines up entirely with Tom and Sally and myself on global warming. And so he has a fellow, a brilliant scientist in the White House working with him, and we can be sure he is not going to change his mind as long as he's in office.
Part of the problem is the media has this narrative. They beat the far left agenda constantly, guys. And that's really the big problem. So, Tom, even though we've got good minds on it, and because I was just thinking to myself, here a moment, like, okay, so why aren't we making an edge? Why isn't this conversation resonating with the public? Or is it, Tom? I'm talking about marketing here. How's the marketing going on this climate change business?
Think for a second of what Jay just said. $3 trillion that would be taken out of the American economy and distributed around the world.
Exactly.
What can we do in this country with $3 trillion. Now, we can get rid of the crumbling infrastructure and restructure it.
We could pay the debt down. We could pay the debt down, buddy. That's $21, $22 trillion.
Yeah. how about rejuvenating the space program? Of course, I'm a big fan of that.
Yeah.
And we have basically given away low Earth orbit to the Russians. We don't have a way of getting out there systematically anymore. We need to do that. That's the spur to technology. Those trillions of dollars can make wonders happen. And the reason, by the way, that we're not experiencing what they're experiencing in France right now, which is riots in the streets, burning cars in Paris, basically putting a nation at a standstill, is because we have retained that $3 trillion and not like the French promised to spend it.
Yeah. Well, you know, Tom, I'm wondering that $3 trillion, if it was given to NASA and you could make the decision on where to spend that, I wonder, what do you think the real estate, the cost of Mars would be if we tried to purchase that?
Well, it wouldn't be even Mars that you'd want to worry about. You want to get back into low Earth orbit. You want to set bases up on the moon.
There you go. There you go.
You want to make sure that the Webb telescope can function and be repaired at the L2 position beyond the moon, which we can't even reach right now.
Thanks for saying that, actually, because there's all this hype about Mars. And I wanted to ask you, is Mars, is this a real, I mean, I keep shaking my head every time I see the plans ahead over the next many years. Is this a real objective of NASA to get to Mars? Is this going to be a...
Yeah, by the way, it should be a long-term objective. I personally believe we ought to go to Phobos first, which is the fast-moving inner moon of Mars, for a number of reasons. But it's not going there that's important. It's developing the technology that allows you to do it. Because in the Apollo program, we spread that technology all over the world. There is not one job in the world that has not been affected by the technology that America developed in the space program, in the moon program called Apollo. And I mean everywhere in the world. People have cell phones, people have... And, you know, the miniaturization of electronics that was needed to get there, that spread all over the world. Medical technology, we needed medical sensing in order to make sure the astronauts stayed alive and monitor their condition. You walk into any hospital today, anywhere on the planet, and you see machines that couldn't exist and wouldn't exist were it not for the American space program. And we only spent $20 billion doing that. We're talking about $3 trillion that we would add to the world's economy. And again, developing and redeveloping that technology to get to Mars, that's the important part. It's not landing on the planet itself. It's spreading that human know-how and knowledge all over the world. And if we...
You know, that is so well said, but the listeners have to understand that Mr. Obama essentially captured NASA for his 8 years in office, putting them behind the climate change agenda of the leftists. Hopefully it's coming out of that now, and we'll be able to do the things you're talking about.
Obama hijacked the agency.
Yeah.
He basically hijacked, destroyed the space shuttle.
Mm-hmm.
And by the way, Bush proposed its elimination, but Obama, with full control, veto-proof Congress, made sure that it didn't fly after his second year in office. How do you like that?
Yeah, no, I do. Listen, it was a sad day for a lot of patriots, for a lot of Americans, when they seen NASA and they seen our space program go to hell in a handbag. And it happened, as you say, over a period of years. And it was a combination of, you really do, you bring it back to Bush administration. See, that's kind of what it is, to use a metaphor here. I mean, the reason Obama was so successful in doing a lot of these things in his 8 years, his eight miserable years in office, is because he had a president before him like W, who set it up perfectly for him to get in there and do the things that he did. So that's the way I see it anyways. All right, listen, climate change
you see it correctly.
Yeah, but, well, that's always been my view. In fact, like I said, you go back through the last four or five administrations, Tom, and it's just another day in the neighborhood because they're all the damn same. So, all right, let's do this. I want to pause a second here. Let me tell folks and bring everybody up to date on what we're doing here. We're having just an awesome conversation, but I want to take a turn now as we come back here from a pause here. I want to talk about the past and the future of climate change. I want to discuss some of the planetary cycles, some interesting, as you look at a lot of these cycles, which of course Tom knows full well, and I'm sure Jay does well, all of these cycles that are scientific cycles that we're in. It is interesting, and what I'm wondering, the big question I'm wondering, if the guys have an answer, is do we know where we are in any of these planetary cycles? So you're listening to Viewpoint Presents 10-part series. It's where we're taking up, I say, some of the biggest issues of our generation. Things like today, climate change, immigration, the Orwellian state, our elections, gun control, terrorism, the deep state, Trump factor, all the things that you really need to pay attention to. So Viewpoint Presents, that's the deal. Over the next 10 weeks, we'll bring these to you on our program on America Out Loud Talk Radio, friends. We invite you there. And again, let's pause a moment here. We'll be back with this stellar panel and conversation and continue on with climate change. Back in a moment.
We are the vision of the voices. You can email us at talk@americaoutloud.com.
Think back to the last time you felt healthy and energized. The best times of our lives occur when we're at the peak of our health, sleeping better, full of energy and focus. We know that fades with age, and you might be feeling the effects of aging as low energy and poor sleep. But it doesn't have to be that way. There haven't been any nutrition systems designed to rejuvenate our bodies as we get older, until now. Healthy Cell Pro is the only multi-nutrient system that impacts the building block of your body, the cell. Created by anti-aging expert and Nobel Prize nominee, Dr. Vincent Giampapa. Award-winning Healthy Cell Pro cuts through the complexity of nutrition supplements by simply giving you the purest ingredients, filling dietary gaps to nourish your cells and enhance your quality of life for optimal performance. Visit HealthyCell.com and use code OUTLOUD for an exclusive discount or call 844-869-9958.
I'm a layman when it comes to climate change. I'm not a scientist, clearly. I'm an entertainer. That's what I do for a living, people. But I got to tell you this. I figured it out a long time ago. I didn't need anybody telling me that this was big business. You can see all this stuff coming. You can see these policies, friends, and you can see how it works. And I kind of figured that out about this a while ago. Now, are we concerned with the planet? Well, listen. Worrying and creating stress within yourself on something you possibly can't control is an idiot's game to begin with, okay? We can't control the climate of this planet. I mean, just think of how many times do I say to you all out there, this magnificent blue marble that floats in the universes of universes. I mean, think about the miracle behind Earth and think about the miracle behind our existence and then come back and talk to me about climate change, friends. I mean, I can figure this out pretty quick myself, I think. And anyways, our panel here today, Tom Weissmuller is here. Dr. Jay Lair is here, Sally Fernandez. We're having a great conversation about climate change. I'm learning some things right here, right as I'm sure you are. I want to talk about these planetary cycles a moment, guys, before we lose time on this and talk about the past, and we'll talk about the future of it as well. Now, when you start to study this climate change business and you look into it, as our producers did coming into this program today for me, all right, there's a 100,000 year cycle. There's a 405,000 year cycle, which is a 45,100 year swing, Tom. There's a 41,000 year cycle in the tilt of Earth's axis relative to its orbit around the sun. There's a 21,000 year cycle caused by a wobble of the planet's axis. And of course, there's a, you know, every 4 year cycle when the politicians elect another president in the White House, right? So, Tom, out of all those out of all those cycles, brother, what's the worst cycle? The 4 year cycle or the 400,000 one?
Well, I'm going to talk about one you didn't even mention, and that is the solar cycle.
Okay.
And the solar cycle does have an impact on Earth. And it's every 11 years, and then every 22 years, the sun gains sunspots and then loses them, gains them and loses them. When they have increased sunspots, we get more radiation headed toward Earth. Mm-hmm. The solar wind gets stronger. And the reason that's important is that the stronger the solar wind is, the fewer cosmic rays that impact the atmosphere. Now, why is that important? Because cosmic rays entering the atmosphere ionize particles in the atmosphere upon which water vapor condenses to form clouds. And when you get more clouds, you get a cooling of the Earth. If you have no sunspots, cosmic rays flood the Earth. And the relationship is actually what they call an inverse relationship. In other words, as sunspots increase, cosmic rays decrease, and vice versa. Now, the problem is the solar cycle, the peaks in sunspots have begun diminishing. The last three solar cycles, each one is about two-thirds of the one before it. So we're getting fewer sunspots and deeper dips where there are no sunspots. For instance, every month last year and this year had periods of no sunspots, which means lots of cosmic rays. It has to get cooler, and in fact, it does. And when we had the Maunder Minimum, the Little Ice Age, there were no sunspots at all for 160 years. And that was a huge driver of climate on the planet. And so the sun is very important.
Okay, aren't we going into a 100-year cycle with the sun emitting less rays, which it will put us basically into another mini ice age?
Well, that's what the Russians claim. A lot of Russian researchers are in there. And of course, they're worried about it because look where they live, and it gets very cold in Russia. But there's also a 100-year cycle.
Let's talk short-term for a moment. What the people listening in would be more concerned with. I think all of us probably will agree, based on everything Tom has just said, that we're going to have a cooler Earth in about 20 years, a measurably cooler Earth, maybe a degree Fahrenheit. We'll easily adapt to it. But what I will predict is the same people that want to shut off fossil fuels because of global warming will figure out a way to scare us with the cooling still to shut off fossil fuels. They have the ability to tell any lie they want, and they buy their ink by the barrel.
Hmm.
Yeah, as long as wow. tax revenue flows in, they're going to try to get their way.
So you're saying right. in 10 years. Now, you're saying in 10 years, Jay.
I'd say 20.
Okay, 20 years.
And again, I think that it'll clearly be measurable in 20 years, but the battle between good and evil, the liberals, the progressives against the rest of us will continue, and they'll figure out another way to tell lies, to have the, as H.L. Mencken once said, the practical purpose of politics is to keep the populace alarmed, to be screamed,
Absolutely.
To be led to safety. Endless hobgoblins,
Absolutely.
All imaginary.
100%, Jay. 100% there. You got my vote. Hey, I'm confused about something. I need clarification on something. I am really confused at this point, because here's the deal. If we're getting colder in the next 20 years, as Jay, as you put out there right now, I thought this whole global warming thing, we were getting hotter, they said. What's going on? I'm confused.
Well, they're going to use whatever happens to their benefit. I mean, that's the way they work. So I think the public will be a little harder to convince that we're destroying the world with global warming and climate change with fossil fuels in 20 years. But believe me, they will make the effort.
So what I'm wondering is, Tom, do they come back now once we figure this out, the public, and do they now call it global cooling and not global warming? Or do they take that metaphor back and go to the global thing? I mean, you know what I'm saying? I mean, how do you market that, I wonder?
Well, it worked for a while in the 1970s.
Exactly.
In fact, we did have a cooling period, mm-hmm. and you had headlines, magazine covers with icebergs on them and things like that. But nowadays, of course, they're using the polar bear as a meme for the same thing, and you have them on a melting iceberg. That's okay.
Totally.
The fact is, yes, the atmosphere will get cooler quicker, but the oceans are a buffer against that. They retain heat. The molecular density of seawater is 800 times that of the atmosphere. So they retain the heat, and the cooling that is going to be happening, that is happening now, is going to be ameliorated or moderated. But it is going to get cooler. The oceans will release that heat over time. And by the way, when you're in an airplane, you fly over the ocean, it looks black. Why? It's absorbing all the sunlight that hits it, as opposed to clouds or snow where it gets reflected off. So, yes, the climate's going to get cooler. It's going to get cooler slowly. But the solar cycle is definitely visible, happening. Cosmic rays are increasing. The great Svensmark in Sweden has written a number of papers on the effect of that increased cosmic rays, and there's Israeli scientist Nir Shaviv who has underscored it the same. These guys are experts in the field, and they have got it right, and I wish the newspapers would catch up with them.
The one thing we're not hearing a lot about is overpopulation versus emissions. Let's talk about that contrast, please, of overpopulation.
Oh, Malcolm, you came to the right person here. I've been studying populations for 40 years. We have the opposite problem of overpopulation now. All the predictions that initially we'd hit 15 billion, then they dropped to 12, then they dropped to 10. Nobody's talking about more than 9 now. And the more affluent you get, the less children you have. 50 years ago, the average in the developing world was 6.5 kids. Right. Now it's 2.8. Most countries are going to face an economic problem of too few children. China's facing it right now. They stabilized at one-child family. They now have an old population. They don't have young people to man the factory floor. So there's an economic problem with the fact that our population is probably of the world is not going to grow above 9 billion people. And we have to deal with the fact that we no longer have a growing population economically. So overpopulation, with the exception of a couple countries that are still growing a little bit in India and Indonesia, a little bit in Africa, by and large, is not a world problem anymore.
Yeah.
Okay. The reason I think it's so important to separate the rhetoric from what's really happening is, number one, you can't change the climate. And so what we need to do as scientists and engineers is be able to predict what's happening, understand what's happening, and use your ingenuity to protect the population against it. That's why we have air conditioning, so when it gets hot, we can use it. That's why we have heaters and fossil fuel to heat our homes when it's cold. And so instead of trying to say we can change the climate, we need to understand the climate and then use our ingenuity to improve our standard of living.
Yeah. What's the answer moving forward now? When we talk about all the planetary cycles, Tom, we started this segment talking about all these cycles. What's the answer moving forward? We have these two programs here. We've got one that's pushing climate change and all of the politics that go with it, and the other, which are a group of scientists and others who say this is a bunch of baloney. What do you see happening in the business of climate change ahead?
Well, you're not going to change the cycles, all right? There's a 60-year cycle that is governed by the planet Jupiter, goes around the sun every 12 years. Saturn goes around 30 times. Mm-hmm. So if you have 5 cycles of Jupiter and 2 of Saturn that basically make the 60-year cycle. And the effect they have on the sun, by the way, when they are lined up together, the sun is not like a solid rock. It is a super molten blob
but you can't pull at it. And Jupiter and Saturn, when they pull, they do change the structure of the sun in some way. And I think they change the sunspots too. And we'll find out because we're coming close to where Saturn and Jupiter line up together. Maybe it gets colder, maybe it gets warmer. My guess is it's going to increase cosmic rays, or decrease them, which is great for us. But we're now changing our cycles. What we need to do is change the politics that allows politicians to assume that we can change these cycles.
Let's talk about changing the politics. How do we do that? Jay, speak to that point. How do we change the politics of this country? That's a big question.
Well, yes, I think there's one key word that I use all the time, and it's arrogance. If we can convince the public that it is totally arrogant to think that man can affect the planetary system and the climate of the Earth based exactly on what Tom just said about orbits of Saturn and Jupiter, we are insignificant when it comes to nature. And based on what Sally said a moment ago, all we can do is try to understand the system and be and adapt to it. We can convince the public that the mathematical models that these government-financed scientists use were never intended to predict the future and alter the economy. They are used to better understand systems like climate, so that we can understand better and be more prepared. Whether we're warming or we're cooling, we can prepare for it. And that's what we need to teach the public.
Yeah, Malcolm, all those models have failed. The models that Jay just talked about, every single one of them, actually is 103. Three of them came close. Mm-hmm. None of them were accurate when it came to predicting temperature on the Earth. And they all failed on the high side. If you're talking about random error, half should be below, half should be on top. Mm-hmm. They're not. They are structured to show warming where there isn't any warming.
The comment that Jay just made a moment ago was, I think, a brilliant comment, which to me put it in context, the problem of what we're facing out there. When he talked about arrogance, for instance, one of the quotes you said, I actually jotted this down, Jay, a while back here. You were speaking about Obama's climate action plan, and you said exactly that. It's sheer arrogance to think that man can control the temperature of this planet or all of these planets or what have you, or, you know, circumstances. That's a profound statement. Getting the public to understand that is really, really key. Do one of you know, let's take a minute and talk about the profits. I want to talk about the business. Al Gore is a name everybody knows. He almost was president of the nation. He's obviously the face of climate change in a lot of ways to a lot of people. But what kind of money are we talking here? Because obviously money's got to be a drive. It's either money or power is a driving force in these kinds of conversations.
Okay, Al Gore is pushing toward being a billionaire, and he should be in the prison cell next to Bernie Madoff, because his scheme is bigger than Madoff's Ponzi scheme. There's huge money at it. The wind and solar industry have become rich on government subsidies based on scaring the public with fossil fuels. They think wind and solar is wonderful. It's actually impossible. We can never come close to running the Earth on wind and solar. In fact, we can't build a wind turbine or a solar farm without having 100% backup with fossil fuel at the ready when the wind doesn't blow and the sun doesn't shine. These are the kind of things we must teach the public.
Hey, by the way, you can't fly an airplane on wind or solar. Mm-hmm. You cannot launch a rocket into space on wind and solar. Mm-hmm. There's and you can't drive an electrical grid if the wind stops blowing and it turns out to be nighttime. Think about all that.
Also, you know, with this green, new green cars, you know, the electric cars, these people who buy them, they want to, you know, be totally green, except they plug them in at night when they come home from work, and the electricity that fuels at night is fossil fuel.
Sally, what about their private planes? How do they get fueled, I wonder?
Exactly, and the gates that open and close.
Wind or solar? I mean, and that's the case, isn't it? I mean, the same cats who are talking about it are on private planes. Bernie Sanders was just called out on that this past week. You see that, guys? You know, just called out on the fact that he is spending mega money flying around on his private jets, yet he's one of the biggest voices out there right now, again, talking about climate change, is Bernie Sanders. So,
Malcolm, this is part of the arrogance you talked about.
That's it.
Where politicians, you know, fly around and they don't care about CO2. Look at Macron in France. That's arrogance. When fuel prices worldwide are dropping, mm-hmm. he raises gas taxes in France, and that's arrogance. And the French decided they have had it with that. And that's where you get the yellow jackets rioting in the streets.
That's what
the arrogance gets you, and Macron has learned his lesson quickly because he's canceled his plans to raise those taxes.
Yeah. It's interesting to see what's happened out there in France as you speak about that, Tom. Who wins this battle over the next 10, 20 years, buddy?
Well, I think the battle will never end. I mean, because it's a political battle. You know, I go back, it's a battle between good and evil, socialism and capitalism. So it will never end. But I think the public is becoming more aware of reality. The fact that you said you're not a scientist, but you figured out there was something wrong going on here. And I think more and more of the men and women in the street are understanding that. My organization, the Heartland Institute, is the leader in putting out information to counter the falsehood and lies of the International Climate Change Council. We have a team right now in Poland at the current Conference of Parties, the UN Conference 24, to further promote the fact that we got to end fossil fuels. You go to heartland.org, and we have thousands of documents to convince the public of what the reality is, that man has absolutely no measurable impact on our climate.
All right, Tom, what are your closing comments on it? Go ahead.
This is a complex part of science which is designed to confuse people into paying more taxes. That's, I'm trying to put it in a nutshell. And the way, if I was going to recommend the public to do something, it would be to get a hold of Sally's book, Climatized, and become climatized themselves by getting a good fun read filled with facts that have been actually vetted and verified by some first-rate NASA scientists and other experts. And I think that way you can kill two birds with one stone. You can actually entertain the public and get them to think in the right direction.
Yeah, well, I've read the book. It is a very fascinating read for sure. I really appreciate all of you and your work on the front lines. We will definitely check out the Heartland Institute more. Big thank you to the panel here, Dr. Jay Layer, Tom Weismuller, Sally Fernandez. The book, again, is called Climatized, friends. You can catch that. All the links, in fact, that's in the America Out Loud bookstore. You can catch that book right there and all of her, Sally's books, actually. All of our authors and our experts are on there. Well, listen, what we're trying to do here is shed a little bit light on some of the biggest challenges and issues of our generation. That's what Viewpoint Presents is all about. Over the next 10 weeks, we'll bring you through a journey and talk about all the things you need to know: gun control, climate change, the Orwellian state, immigration, terrorism, the deep state, all these. And of course, I always say the screwed up state after that, right? But you get the picture, friends. There's a lot of conversation here. You'll catch it all back at AmericaOutloud.com. We appreciate you being here and being part of this conversation. Friends, email us at talk@AmericaOutloud.com. Remember, the Out Loud truth continues back at AmericaOutloud.com.